You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. I hope your week is starting out well. I've got a guest co-host joining me today. His name's Tom Paulswitz. I want to give a big thank you to Sarah Anderson of the Global Economy Project. Yes. You can check out their work at inequality.org. I really encourage you to spend some time there. We got some folks that may want to join us on the phones, 855-752-4842. Kind of wanted to open this up, Tom, whether people want to talk about Trump's first 100 days, right. They want to talk about Judge Dugan's arrest, or we want to talk about what will be an absolute disaster of epic-sized proportions for the middle class and working people if Donald Trump has his way with the tax code, which will basically just be like a goodie jar. A grab bag of corporate and billionaire welfare funded by the middle class.
And one of the things we didn't touch on was if the tariffs are going to work, supposedly, like President Trump says, we'll have more jobs, but we won't have tariff money coming in. So and with an already low unemployment of 4.2%, who's going to be taking these jobs that when manufacturing returns? And then how are we going to offset the tax cuts with tariff income if it's not going to be there?
Yeah, so you're zooming ahead. Like, assume everything that Donald Trump says about tariffs works really well, and we've got this huge windfall of revenue generated for the federal government. And so we slash all these programs. We, you know, reduce income taxes for billionaires because they're really hurting these days.
Yeah,
we reduce corporate tax rates because, of course, the wealthiest corporations are really hurting these days. And so dot, 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 all of these businesses eventually bring manufacturing back to the United States. You're asking two questions. We're no longer, there's not as many imports happening. So tariff revenue goes down over time.
And doesn't secondly, fill the gap, right?
Correct. Yep. We have extremely low unemployment right now. You bring all these so-called jobs back. How is that all going to work? Will we even have enough people to fill all these said jobs, which won't come back on a one-to-one basis because corporations will look to automate and do all kinds of other things to reduce their labor cost variability over time. But the meta point is the tariff as revenue source is not a permanent revenue source.
Not sustainable, right.
So then what?
And here's the thing. If you're already working two jobs to make ends meet, you're not looking for a third job. Like, that's not going to solve the issue.
Well, this is, I've gotten into this discussion with so many conservative friends because I hear all the time, we want to incentivize work. So my first question is, well, then why do we tax wealth, the dollar earned from wealth less than we tax the dollar earned from work? If you're no longer working, you're not earning an income, you're not contributing to Social Security. By the way, scrap the cap. That's stupid. That would help Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment, all those things. If you are not earning an income and all you're doing is fat catting because your wealth is just throwing off more and more wealth, which I always like to refer back to my good friend Morris Pearl, who explains the billionaire tactic is you just sit on your enormous wealth. You never actually sell off much or a lot of your assets because you can just borrow against the asset.
Right.
The interest and the expense of the loan itself is a tax deduction, and then and you it's nominal die
compared to your overall
correct wealth. And then you die and it all like magically moves and avoids so a whole bunch of tax avoidance strategies at death as well, and effectively you end up with a money printing machine ad infinitum, and you don't end up incurring a substantial tax penalty, or I shouldn't even say penalty, tax cost when your wealth grows exponentially, and it's a real problem.
And if it doesn't work, you declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, just start all over. It'll be fine.
As many times as it takes, right? Because you've got some hidden assets somewhere to get started over.
So the first question I always ask people when they're like, we need to incentivize work. I'm like, yeah, but not rich people. We're not worried about them working. You're only worried about poor people working. And trust me, poor people work. And the second thing I ask them is, okay, then you tell me what number of hours someone should be expected to work in a week, whatever that number is. Right. And somebody could say 80. Okay, fine. 80 hours a week. That's, or 60. If we say it's 40, whatever it is, 50, let's just call it 60, which is a ton of hours. I almost
a ton
said
of hours.
An FCC not compliant word there. Whoops. Right. Let's not do that.
No HR professionals are currently listening, hopefully.
No, a ton. It's a ton of work. Say it's 60 hours. My next question to them is, so why don't we have a wage level that at 60 hours allows a person to live with their basic necessities met, housing, transportation, healthcare, and maybe even a little bit left over for, you know, food, medication.
Yep.
Right? Like that's a calculable number. Right. Car pay, whatever it is.
Right. Whatever it is. Right.
We're not anywhere in the ballpark of
not
that
even
number.
Close.
So don't talk to me about this being about, it's just to me that the failure to match up the stated value and the system is the thing that is most disturbing to me. And by the way, this thing, stock buybacks, those weren't legal in the United States until 1982, right? The Reagan administration snuck this in. It's now under the Internal Revenue Code Section 10B8. They didn't exist before. What are they? It's exactly what it sounds like. A corporation buys back its stock,
right?
Gives cash to the person that owns said stock, thereby reducing the supply of their stock on the market, driving up the price of the remaining stock, which creates more on paper wealth for the largest shareholders. Right. And they've just gotten this huge cash infusion.
It's a great tool. CFOs love it, right? Because it's one of those wonderful tools to juice stock price. You know, theoretically, it's only temporary unless you keep making more money. But, you know, as long as the tax code allows you to keep making more money. But I think this whole income inequality thing, Maggie, I think it comes down to, as a society, we value capital more than labor. And it is something that I just cannot wrap my head around, because it's really hard to create capital.
But that's not what conservatives say.
But they're it's really hard to create capital to without labor, right?
Correct.
When anybody says, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and I made it happen. Well, you leveraged labor to make that happen. It's really hard to create a business and grow a business that doesn't involve people. Like, there aren't that many that are able to do that. So by leveraging other people, you're able to create wealth. But somehow that wealth is more important than making sure people have their basic needs met along the way.
It's fascinating to me because I've worked with a number of entrepreneurs, and most of them are serial entrepreneurs over the course of my career. Every single one of them that has been highly successful have been people that have in way, shape, form, deed, and word, pay their people a livable way, and like want the people that work for them to also get fat at the table, if you will. Like they understand that that needs to happen. And you made this point with our last guest, Tom, and it bears repeating. 70% of our country's economic productivity, as measured by gross domestic product, is generated by consumer spending. Let me put it differently. The economic growth of the United States is entirely driven by the middle class. And if the middle class starts curbing, especially discretionary consumer spending, which right. they will under Donald Trump's ideal tariff state and this ever more regressive income tax system that we have, it will eventually slow economic growth. Yeah. And so your point, Tom, as I understand it, is like, where are the CEOs? I'll tell you where they are right now, counting their money all the way to the bank and not wanting to draw the ire of Donald Trump. They want to fly under the radar and count the bills.
And I'll throw in a third thing, is that recessions are great buying opportunities for assets.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have money in a recession, you're going to win. If you have a job and don't have a lot of wealth, you're going to lose. So it exacerbates this inequality. So CEOs, most of them aren't really afraid of recessions because they know individually they're going to get more wealthy. It's whether they're going to keep their job or not. But we've seen, you know, them job hop from job to job and they make more money. But the bottom line is that recessions are very good for wealthy people because it allows them to gobble up even more assets.
Just like wars are very good for wealthy people.
Yes.
Right. It's like
things that aren't good for the rest of us, things that aren't good for society in general.
It's funny because the lead in for the second hour, I talk about it. Not everything I'm going to talk about this hour is going to be illegal, but it's all bad for regular people.
Bad, right.
Like wars and regressive tax systems, whether they're tariffs or income tax, bad for regular people, really good for our billionaire overlord classes. Like that works out very, very well. And this statistic is the one that I want everyone to have seared into their brain. In addition to, well, why do we tax work more heavily than we tax a dollar made from wealth? Know that one. Yep. Ask the question, hey, if somebody's willing to work 60 hard hours a week, why can't they live in basic human dignity? They can't, or many people can't in this country because we don't actually have a minimum wage. Ask someone this question, why is it that $50 trillion in wealth from 1981 to date has gone from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. If this works so well and all of this wealth trickles down, why are we actually seeing wealth trickle up to the tune of 50 trillion?
It would be shared. It would be shared, or more people would be wealthier. And that is not what we're seeing.
Not what we're seeing. We're seeing the opposite of that.
We're seeing less people become more hyper wealthy.
Yes. Let's get a call or two in. Anne from Chippewa Falls, nice to see you on my caller list. How are you? Say hello to Tom. What would you like to share this afternoon?
Hi, Tom. Hi, Maggie. I think your show is awesome. I get so frustrated because these wealthy people have no idea what it's like to be a working person. But then again, I also get very angry about people in rural areas, which I used to live in growing up. They're all Trumpers, and they're the people that are going to get hurt the worst, and they don't get it. The Trump administration has lied so much. Fox News has lied so much to these people that they think that it's the immigrants that are causing all the problems. See, the rich people have a great message. They have a great message. They know what to say and what to do for these people to buy into it, and it's really affected a lot of families.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I've been saying this since Donald Trump's second victory. How did we get here, right? And there were five things that had to happen. And it's what got us here. And the first and most important one, and we'll talk a little bit more about these other figures, maybe I'll say maybe six things. But the first and most important one is that the regular folks that voted for Donald Trump are experiencing true good faith, economic, existential anxiety. They are correctly perceiving that the screws are to them and the fix is in. They're getting that message clearly. And I'll talk about the other handful of factors that Anne was getting at just a moment ago, because knowing why we're here helps us figure out how we're going to get there with a more fair tax code and actually valuing dollars earned from work more than dollars earned from wealth. What we say we value. Let's now do it. We're going to continue this discussion with you and Tom.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to share a wee bit of semi-breaking news. About an hour ago, we were getting reports out of Spain and Portugal that there was a massive electrical grid failure, cause unknown, power shut down for some short period of time. Tom, you were the one that was telling me about this. I just heard a snippet about this as I was coming into the studio. Tell us what you understand to date.
Yeah, there was an unexplained disappearance of 15 gigawatts of power, which is about, I want to say, like 60% of the total being consumed at the time. And it wasn't, they don't think it was because the plant shut down or anything else. They're not quite sure where it went, but it was gone for 5 minutes, which cascaded across the entire network and caused the grid just to shut down. And when you think about that and you think about how does that happen, there's a whole bunch of unknowns right now, but it's sure, at least from my standpoint, now we're thinking about, is this potentially a cyber attack? And is this a testing ground to see what can happen? Now, way too early to tell, and I'm not saying it definitely is, but this is one of those areas where if you know when a grid goes down, you could usually pinpoint pretty quickly what
happens. Yep.
And they're struggling to find the cause at this point. So something very strange is happening.
Well, I'll tell you what makes me feel much better about it. The two Russian agents were apparently arrested in Germany and had Pete Hegseth's private cell phone number in their phones when they were arrested in Germany over the weekend. Pete, I sleep better at night because I know we got the best man for the job who deeply respects our security protocols heading up the Department of Defense. Very scary. Very scary. I forget that there's some cable show right now going. I think it was on Netflix with De Niro in it. And legitimately, Tom, this is the premise of the show. They just start shutting down the grid for a few. Some unknown actor starts shutting down the grid for just short snippets of time because they can. Very frightening. Yes. Differently and also frightening. Leaked documents indicate that the upcoming Trump budget proposal, so this is they're in the process of drafting the budget, that they plan to shut down the national 988 free suicide prevention hotline.
Yes.
It's about the corruption, right?
Right.
It's also about the cruelty.
Yes.
Because there's no defending that. You can tell, you can be angry or say, my faith tells me that this is bad, but your faith tells you that it's bad so the people should kill themselves. I can't put that one, that has there's no reasonable defense for that. But, you know, our good friends to the north, Canada, stepping in and saying, hey, we'll do that for our southern neighbors. They're actually being neighborly. But that reminds me, Tom, you know, we were talking about what are the things that brought us to this moment, and the real existential economic angst is a core ingredient. I think the vast majority of us do feel on a very basic level like the economic system isn't working for the vast majority of us, and that is a correct perception. Now, I think what Donald Trump was able to do was speak in a way that made people feel, inaccurately in my opinion, like he actually cared about them. He didn't sound like a politician. He didn't never sound scripted. And people thought, okay, because he doesn't sound scripted, that means he's telling me the truth. They've confused truth-telling and sounding like a regular person for the same thing. They're not. Right. So you have that in the mix. That's factor two. And what Donald Trump has always understood is that when people are afraid, and he activates that fear, he's really good at making people afraid. If you play into people's prejudices and you are easily able to say, you're afraid, I'm the one that can help you. And by the way, we should be blaming these people over here. And because of the way we are socially conditioned, the way that media operates, our brains are primed to believe some of these isms that Donald Trump trades so prolifically on, metastasized by the information sewer, right, that right. amplifies all of that hate. And then this pervasive, I'm going to call it since Nixon to date, underlying idea that has come out of the Republican Party. And the Republican Party's message to the middle class has been, you are in an existential zero-sum game, and if you do not squash yes. your neighbor and anybody else who seeks to get and make anything better of their life, you and your family will lose. This zero-sum, false scarcity, false choice thing, right. as if we can't do security and respect due process, right?
Like right. And in combination of that, it's really Trump coming with the messaging of, I know how to fix it, right? Not no details. No, here's exactly what I'm going to do, but I alone know how to fix it, and I right. will fix it from day one. And I can't tell you how many doors I knocked on where people were like, we got to give him a chance because he says he can fix it. And that happened to me, at least from my standpoint, over and over again. And I would ask, okay, what's he going to do? And they're like, well, we just got to give him a chance. And I know, I think it was the Wall Street Journal or maybe even the Washington Post or the Times wrote some articles about Trump voters, if they had any regret at this point. And most of them were still saying, we're willing to give him a chance to see this through. And yeah. more importantly, they were talking about they're willing to feel the pain in order to get there when he never once asked him to sacrifice. They're just making these leaps of faith saying he told us he knew and we're going to give him a chance.
Our conversation continues. We got a fine guest coming up that's going to talk about the incredible contributions to the Great Lakes economy that are made by skilled immigrants. You're not going to want to miss that discussion with Gina Krause-Villmar. We're going to take some of your calls right after the bottom of the hour before we bring our guest on. So if you're on the phones, Tom and Richard, AJ, I think I just missed you, and Tim, I just missed you, please come on back. We will take your calls next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a fine guest joining us in just a few moments to talk about the contributions to the Great Lakes region from skilled immigrants. We're going to take a moment to get all of your many wonderful texts and phone calls in here. You all have been very patient. Thanks so much. Jack from Merrimack, you want to say what?
Well, Rick Smith has pointed this out on his show more than once. When you have appropriate taxes to corporations and the rich, they throw that money, they put that money into places where it's not going to be taxed. For instance, the big corporations will, instead of using it to support political candidates, which is not tax deductible, they'll put it into R&D. They may even put it into heaven's workers' salaries, and there's so much extra money that these guys have that's not being taxed right now. They can throw it anywhere they want, and what they do is they use it to get all kinds of mischief into our politics. So a rich guy can throw $250 million into the presidential race and buy his way into the top spot in the administration, and he can even throw away, because it wasn't successful, $25 million into a statewide race and not that high. That's
right.
Why we need to tax these guys.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jack. And it's why you hear stock buybacks come up with such incredible frequency, right? Because what's happening is that as corporations, which have enjoyed post-COVID, some of their most flush, biggest profit margins, highest level of profits in modern American history, they're not driving that into R&D. They're not doing capital improvements. They're not paying their employees more. What it's going into, again, many of our largest corporations, massive amounts in stock buybacks, which don't, again, do not benefit the frontline worker. It's pretty astounding. I'm trying to find one of my statistics on this. Give me one.
Yeah, Maggie, while you're looking at that, I'll talk about return on investment of political contributions. I mean, I don't think anybody's tracking the stats, so to speak, but I'm sure the people who are giving, I mean, Elon Musk alone, right? $290 million
right.
to get potentially a $3.4 billion contract. And that's just one contract out of the many different contracts he could get. I mean, I think over and over again, you know, political contributions, people are taking a step back and going, the more I can give, obviously, the bigger windfall I can get.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Here's an example. Lowe's. Which is Lowe's, you think of Ross Stores. These are all what I'm going to call low median worker pay companies, right? Lowe's spent $42.6 billion, with a B, billion dollars on stock buybacks.
Right.
This is enough to have given each of Lowe's employees, 285,000 employees, an annual $30,000 bonus. Every year. For 5 years.
Right. And that money would have been immediately spent and returned right back into the economy. They would have bought a ton of stuff, probably from Lowe's.
From Lowe's? Who knew?
Who knew?
Richard from Waukesha. Go ahead, sir.
I'd like to ask you again when you said, you know, two things and had the second thing was about closing down the suicide line.
Oh,
what did you
yes.
say? The first thing was what?
Yes, that. Thanks so much for the reminder, Richard. I love it when our callers keep me on my toes. Yes. Some breaking news about Trump shutting down the National Suicide Hotline. That's lovely. Also, we're hearing from the Portuguese development minister that the power outage on the Iberian Peninsula, including Portugal and Spain, may be due to a cyber attack. Spain's prime minister asking people not to speculate. So a lot going on there. It looks quite concerning, to say the very least. Also hearing that apparently Oklahoma is going to now start saying that Donald Trump actually won in their public schools. They'll be teaching this, that Donald Trump actually won the presidential election in 2020. So all those young moldable minds in Oklahoma have that to look forward to. Ali from the Northwoods, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into your schedule. I just wanted to ask about Tiffany, and he's trying to get National Park up by the Apostle Islands. And I'm concerned that if that goes through, Donald Trump had said something about drilling and stuff on federal lands. And wouldn't that then be considered a federal land, whereas he could drill for oil in the...
to your point, Ali, National Park designation ain't what it used to be. And I don't trust Tom Tiffany or Donald Trump more than I can, or as far as I can throw them, which ain't far. We'll take a look at that, Ali. Thanks so much. And to cue up our discussion with our next guest, Tom from LA, you had some thoughts about Judge Dugan's arrest.
Yeah, first, Maggie, loved hearing you on Tom Hartman today. I hope that you appear on there more often. Second, love you and Tom on Monday, so thank you for that. You know, they almost act like they're trying to build this narrative that Judge Dugan was like trying to help someone through the Underground Railroad, the way that made this out to be, which is nothing like that whatsoever. But I think it's very interesting. I think it's to the public's awareness that this is not what happened. Also, if Republicans are spewing it, you can bet they're doing it. They act like the biggest victims of anyone. They're supposed to be a party of non-victims. They are the biggest victims of anyone I know. I hope everyone, and I really, really recommend this to everyone, go watch YouTube FDR speeches and learn something from it. This is the way the Democrats need to be talking, getting back to their roots. And last, Maggie, my question for you and Tom is, what is the correlation between Buckley versus Vallejo, First National Bank versus Bilotti, and Citizens United with the whole tax scheme that took place?
Yeah, great question, Tom. I'm going to save the discussion of our corruption laws, which yes. by that I mean to say right. our legalized corruption laws, right. courtesy of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Listen, Buckley v. Vallejo was decided in 1976. It was the first time the Supreme Court basically said there's some categories of money in politics that can never be regulated in this country. It metastasized over 50 years, became Citizens United. But I guarantee you, everyone that's listening right now, I want you to pick a metric, any metric, pick a cod, any cod, a metric that you think reflects whether or not the middle class is doing well. And I want you to look at that metric on a line chart. And I want you to notice what happens to that metric from 1976 to date, whether yep. it's income inequality, wealth inequality, average hourly wages, and whether it keeps up with inflation, CEO to worker pay ratio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll tell you, how about this, union membership, all those things. Since 1976 and accelerating after Citizens United, all of the metrics that track how well the middle class in this country is doing have gotten worse. Much worse. And it's because we legalized corruption courtesy of the Supreme Court and Buckley v. Vallejo, and it's only gotten worse. We're going to have to move on, folks. If you are on the lines, I appreciate you for being there. Don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow. We can do this all again. Let me bring on my very special next guest. Thank you so much, Gina Krause Vilmar, President and CEO of Upwardly Global, for your patience. This is an incredibly important discussion. Those who are here working, immigrants, contribute, they pay taxes, they are an absolutely critical part of our economy. Tell us, when we look at the Great Lakes region, skilled immigrants, refugees and asylees, these people that have the right to work here are essential to continue our region's growth, are they not?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of confusion when people think about the word immigrant, because there has been this this association that being an immigrant means that you're not documented. And the reality is that the story of America has always been a story of immigrant journeys. And yeah. this is merely the latest chapter of that story. And in reality, we're in a demographic shift in this country, and the Great Lakes is experiencing it just like the rest of us are. You know, there are 10,000 baby boomers retiring a day. Not everyone has returned into the economy post-COVID. And by 2035, 100% of growth in our working age population is going to come from immigrants and the children of immigrants, because we are not having as many kids as we used to have. And so it's not even a question of, are immigrants helping to fuel and contribute? It's more of a question of, immigrants are fueling our economy, but they're also going to fuel our future. And so we should stop asking ourselves, who should be allowed in, and actually talk about how do we help set people up for success once they get here?
Folks, that is Gina Krause Vilmar, President and CEO of Upwardly Global. How do we change the dialogue, right? How do we help break through all of this noise? Because right now, you know, if conservatives are saying DEI, that's the modern N-word. If you're saying immigrant, what it means is a violent criminal who doesn't work, right? Any semblance of normalcy in our use of language seems to have been blown out of the water. How do we make sure people are actually getting the information that is accurate about how, if you're a citizen, you're born and raised here, your family's been here for five generations, your economic future is inexorably tied to whether or not we have a vibrant and growing workforce, and that yes. requires immigrants.
I think part of it is reframing the conversation around how do we unlock our collective genius as a nation, and how do we ensure that we understand that our immigration stories and immigrants are a part of that collective genius. In the state of Wisconsin, for example, 18% of the population, the foreign-born population grew by 18%. There are five states in the United States that have increased the number of immigrants moving to those states, and Wisconsin is one of the five. And so they're also contributing in an outsized way to what we call taxes, right? You just mentioned companies are not paying taxes, and yet immigrants are paying $3 billion, big B to your point, in taxes. $1.1 billion is going to states and local contributions. And so our local economies, especially in rural areas, if you're thinking about rural areas, for every immigrant that moves into a rural area, they generate 1.5 new jobs. Wow. They are part of the revitalization story of our rural economies. And yet that's not a story we're telling, but that's a story people are living day in and day out.
Yes.
People know that. People see that. People feel that.
Folks, that is Gina Krause-Villmar, President and CEO of Upwardly Global. Gina, can you come back with us? We're going to take care of a little bit of business, and I want to flesh out this conversation so people can absorb what you're saying, Gina. It's so important, some really key facts there. We got Tom Paulswitz with me in the guest co-host chair. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. How many jobs are created where you live when an immigrant moves into town? We'll discuss that and so much more next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. We're in our last segment of the afternoon. Don't worry, though. We got Pete Schwabe coming up next with Nightlight. So we've got your evening and early, I should say early evening and late afternoon covered right here on Civic Media. Right now, we've got a fantastic guest. Her name is Gina Krause-Villmar. She's the president and CEO of Upwardly Global, a leading voice in ensuring skilled immigrants, refugees, and asylees who hold the right to work can fully contribute to our economy here in Wisconsin and beyond. Gina, we've been talking about trying to reset the dialogue. And so speak directly to our listeners, especially folks that live in some of the more rural areas. When they hear at the barber shop or in church or at their favorite watering hole, oh yeah, Donald Trump, we really need to get these immigrants out of here. And these are terrible. How do we try to move past that? What are some of the key facts or language approaches that you hope people can use to at least maybe open the mind of someone that they may be talking to in these places where we do eventually talk a little politics?
Yeah. And so I would say, you know, just starting with the facts, the reality is that close to 50% of immigrants coming into the United States to work have a bachelor's degree or higher. So these are not the same people who came to build the railroads. This is a very mixed skilled population. I would also say, if you're looking at things like physicians, 99 million Americans do not have access to a primary healthcare provider. And that is largely based in rural communities. That means that you have to travel over 100 miles in order to access a physician. That means you are not in an area that has a primary healthcare physician. And yet, we have 215,000 internationally trained doctors in the United States today that are unable to work as physicians because they have to go through the whole process over again. That is a 5 to 6 year commitment to relicense. That is over $10,000 in investment in order to get the coursework and the work experience in order to get back into your field. And that locks a lot of people out. And so we are seeing states, actually. We're seeing Illinois, we're seeing Washington, we're seeing Massachusetts, which just passed this, the state of Virginia, which are passing legislation that allows these internationally trained doctors to work on hospital floors underneath a US licensed doctor for 2 years, but they're getting on that hospital floor immediately. And so I think it's going to take that kind of creativity, and it's going to be a states-based focus that's really going to change the conversation around what is possible in terms of people who are coming with skills, who need to contribute, and have an outsized contribution that they can be making, not only in certain industries, but honestly in our rural communities. So I think it's important to remember that, you know, it's a lot of folks that are wanting to contribute to the US, and it's also that skilled population. I think that the biggest thing for if you're sitting in that bar in a local area and you want to talk politics, I think you have to get real about your own family's journey and when they got here and how they were treated and how that's replicating itself today and what those similarities are. And I think you have to get real about the people in your lives that you rely on who are immigrants. And I think you have to talk about it. I think people have gotten so scared to talk about, oh, I'm the children of immigrants, or I'm the grandchildren of immigrants.
Right.
And we have to get back to understanding that this is part of our identity and our journey and our story. And until we start to accept that, we're not going to be able to move forward, not just as a country that believes in human dignity, but as a country that believes in a competitive economy.
Yeah. Oops. And I think that, you know, all of us know people who are either benefiting by having immigrants come here to either work for them or work as part of the infrastructure of the economy. So why is there this disconnect, though, between what's happening at the local level and what's happening at the national level? Because you see all these towns going, we need to bring people in. We're going to find some people to do all this work. And you have these small town mayors, you have these, you know, councils who are going, this is essential to the lifeblood of our community. But then you get to the national level and suddenly there's this demonization of what's happening. How do we bridge that gap?
I think we bridge that gap by creating innovation in our cities and our states. And I think cities and states are doing it. I mean, for example, in Wisconsin, Upwardly Global, we're partnering with the Wisconsin Technical College System.
Oh,
we're
great.
Piloting with three of the colleges out of the 14. And they've got a high number of immigrants and children of immigrants that are in their education system that are looking to get jobs when they graduate. And we're helping them understand, how do you unpack their ability to be competitive for the workforce and to find that professional job, so that they're connecting the dots around success. I will also say we work with a lot of employers, and employers do not care where talent comes from.
Right.
If they're work authorized and they're qualified, that is all they care about around the bottom line. We have low unemployment. We have serious labor shortages, and that labor shortage gets much bigger as you get to mid and high skill roles. And that is not going to be filled by us trying to graduate everyone we can possibly can, because we just do not have enough people to do it. And let's be real, we never had enough people to do it at any decade of this country.
Yes, exactly.
Folks, that is Gina Krause-Vilmar, President and CEO of Upwardly Global. Immigrants in Wisconsin pay $3 billion in taxes and have total spending power of $8.3 billion. Those numbers are only going up. You do the math. Thanks so much, Gina. That's going to do it for us this afternoon. It's been my pleasure. Please stay tuned here on Civic Media. Thank you to Tom Paulson. It's my guest co-host on Mondays. A nice man and a reasonable guy in politics. Who knew that there was such a thing? My name's Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for human dignity and our immigrant neighbors, friends, and loved ones who drive our Wisconsin economy forward.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.